I pushed it.
Push the
button. Balls, a supernatural podcast with Lizzie and Missy.
Did you get a nap?
No.
Me either.
I did not.
I tried.
There's too much going on.
I know. And then when I couldn't, I was like, fuck it, I'm watching Cobra Kai. And I got an episode and a half before I was like, damn it, I gotta go feed the dogs.
Damn.
Damn, damn, double damn.
You kind of cut out there.
No, oh, your internet connection is unstable.
Much oh, no.
Myself. So thank you, computer.
Be stable.
Be stable. I'm connected, so here's to fingers crossed.
Okay.
I'm in the area with the router.
Router?
Yeah. Maybe it's just the fact that there are four people on an internet.
Is that it? We just keep adding devices over here and then wonder why it doesn't work.
Which is crazy to think about because I remember back in the day we had one computer hooked up to like one thing and that was it.
One dial-up.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
I was thinking about the other day, every computer is hooked up to it. So that's the Mac, the work computer, my dad's computer, the iPad, and then Aubrey's school iPad. So that's five. Plus every TV in the house either has a Roku on it or is a smart TV. So that's...
And all the cell phones.
One, two, three, four, and then two cell phones.
So we're up to 11.
It's a lot.
That is a lot. But yeah, what I was saying before, the internet became unstable, much like my relationships.
Yep.
Oh, thank you. I'll be here all week. is that it's been a couple of days since I watched these two episodes, and I liked them both so much that I really remember everything that happened, like almost vividly.
Oh, really?
Because I was telling my brother about them, and it was funny because I was talking about Hollywood Babylon, and he goes, oh, is that with the Bela Lugosi? And I was like, no, but that one is also one of my favorites because I like how creative it became when it was that black and white in Western Pennsylvania.
Is that the monster movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what drew me to that one was one, they're set in like Dutch PA. but two, I like classic horror movies. So that just the way that it was shot with the classic monsters and that stuff.
Yeah.
But I explained this one because I originally thought this one was actually the Paris Hilton one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which isn't it, because it goes back to the tie-in of like they're creative but also very similar later on. Because we had that one episode that I thought was a completely different episode.
Yeah.
But as soon as I watched this one, I remembered what this was and thought it was hilarious. And then I do like Folsom Prison Blues. I don't think it really sticks out too much, but I liked it.
It does, and it's a cool story, but it's not one that's like, oh, do you remember that one episode of Supernatural that, you know, all this stuff happened? When we get to that one, I feel like that one was kind of like, was a little drawn out.
Yeah, and I wish, I don't know, there are things that I wish they had done more of, but I liked the ending of it better than some of the endings they've had. I thought they handled the ending very well.
Yeah, I really...
The filming aspect of it, as well as... Wax, I've been watching too much Cobra Kai!
Wax on? Wax off.
But meanwhile, it's like, wax on! Wax off! But I liked... The way that the cinematography used for it and how they told the story, as well as the twist that they took with it without telling you about it till then.
The twist and twist and twist and twist.
Mm-hmm.
All the twisty turns.
They were doing the twist.
Okay, so what are we talking about this time?
Even though first,
about it.
First, let's do some house cleaning. We're almost to like 1,000 downloads.
I don't, just on Spotify. Because that's the only, apparently the only stats we can get.
That's so exciting. Thank you guys, first off. Thank you so much for listening to us that much, because we started this just for fun, because we really like the series.
It's still fun. What are you talking about?
Yes. but the fact that, like, you guys have kind of embraced it and interacted, for those that have interacted... we really appreciate it, because that's one thing about this fandom is that it is a family, and we want to meet everybody, and like obviously we really enjoy this series and want to share it with people, so thank you guys.
Yes, thank you for embracing us and welcoming us to the family.
Yes.
I mean, we were there, but now we're there, like, on a different level.
It's like when, it's like the hunter's meet and greet.
Yeah.
This podcast is like our little roadhouse, and hunters just come and go.
I like it. Nice.
But that aside, we are talking about episodes 18, Hollywood Babylon, and episode 19, Folsom Prison Blues. And we're tying those two together in this episode because they pretty much deal with the same ghost and ghoul. And I'm sure with some random shit and with my research, they kind of tie together.
Mm-hmm.
So we just thought we'd kill two birds with one stone and just kind of knock about.
Get them done. Get us closer to the finale.
And then we'll move on to season 3.
Oh, what?
And we were talking, I'm going to throw it out there because I want to do it. Hi, Tallahassee. For Halloween, we're actually going to do a fun thing. We're not sure exactly what we're going to do. So if you guys have any ideas, obviously toss them out to us. But we might not do a specific depending on what episode falls on Halloween. But maybe do like a monster mash.
I think that would be so fun. I like that idea.
We'll have a special Halloween episode for you guys.
If there's any monsters you want to hear about.
And maybe we'll do a live.
Oh, you guys, what?
You can do a live. You can do like maybe a Zoom with some people or like a Facebook live.
Yeah, I'll talk to you. I found a thing. I'll talk to you about that later.
And then we could have costumes. Should we jump into it?
Let's get into it.
All right. All right, so we're going to first talk about episode 18, Hollywood Babylon, which is set in Los Angeles, California. And this episode came out April 19th, 2007.
Did you see me do that in my head? I'm like, April 19th. Okay.
Yes, April 19th, 2007.
Well, I remember because last episode, in Roadkill, you said that it was set in February. So I was like, man, we really jumped ahead a lot. But that's when it came out, not necessarily when it was.
Yeah, so Roadkill, handy dandy notebook.
Oh, look at that.
So Roadkill, because it was set in February, but that episode did come out in March. So okay. They're like a month behind. That was the one few episodes we actually were given like a timeline to place where Supernatural is.
Yeah.
So we don't really know the time frame on this one. For all we know, this could be like a week later. Just kidding. There was an episode in between. So this could be like 2 weeks later.
The next day.
Yeah, they literally just somehow got there.
They hatched a plan. Let's get arrested.
Yeah.
That's the next episode. Ahead of myself already.
This is them becoming PAs, which is our first kind of introduction to the creativity and tongue-in-cheekness that Supernatural has.
It's so deep.
So much tongue in fucking cheek.
I'll talk about some of that. So our rankings?
Yes.
They're closer than they were the last time. Let's say that.
Okay, so they're not end of spectrum.
Right, yeah. They're roughly close, maybe.
Okay.
So decider.com, which I looked up, is our friend Jessica. I did it just to make sure this time that I wasn't saying it wrong all these times.
I got you, Jessica.
She ranked this number 69.
Is it because Dean got it on, Bow Chicka Wow Wow?
I changed that to Lovey Lovey again.
There was nothing Lovey Lovey about it.
It was awfully quick. I've just thrown it out there.
I do have to admit, we don't know how long the house was a rockin'.
But it was a rockin'.
But by the time they were done, Sam came a knockin'.
Would the whole trailer move like that, though?
I guess I think it was just to give us a heads up, but obviously they couldn't just, like, have him come out getting dressed and, like, having that awkward, I don't know.
Yeah, okay, anyway. So she ranked at number 69.
Mm-hmm.
Sam and Dean fight a ghost on a movie set, and Mick G and Gilmore Girls get name-dropped. The first episode where the show really broke the fourth wall, the way Supernatural could make fun of itself, even in season 2, was a harbinger for the greatness that we would see in the future.
Agreed. I agree with everything she said.
Me too. Uncle Joey ranked it higher. He put it at number 26.
Damn, he really likes this one.
He really liked it. He said, almost every Supernatural episode played strictly for laughs works, and this is no exception. a great episode about death during the shooting of a movie that appears to be a moronic version of Evil Dead 2. Gary Cole is in full D-bag mode as a studio exec. Full D-bag mode.
I also agree with everything that he said.
Man, they just hit the nail on the head on this one.
They did, and I like that they really didn't say too much of the same thing.
Right.
That they kind of hit both sides of what this episode was.
Yeah.
And honestly, I didn't even get the Evil Dead 2 reference. I'm a horrible, horrible horror fan.
A horrible horror fan?
Yes. I don't even know why, but now looking back, yeah, that's exactly what this was. It was a horrible Evil Dead 2 ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
With worse acting.
What are you talking about? They did such a good job.
Everything was so realistic.
It's
especially
so...
especially the girl who's like, over there.
Over.
Now the ghost there. Is over there. Shoot. Oh, you shot a shotgun. Did I jump? No, I didn't jump. My bad.
That girl, and the girl, before I get to the plot, the girl's scream was horrible.
Awful. It was definitely not a Scream Queens.
No, it was horrible when she was practicing, and then it was like her real scream, and it was even worse.
But she's a star.
Uh-huh, sure.
So should we get a synopsis?
I got a plot. I notice I say plat.
Plat.
I have a plot.
Plot.
Plop. After a stagehand is apparently killed by a spirit on the set of a horror film, Sam and Dean head to Los Angeles to investigate. They first speak with the actress that witnessed the phenomenon, who Dean is personally a fan of and later had lovey-lovey with.
Oh, giggity-giggity.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
They then learn that it was only a publicity stunt, but a studio executive soon dies at the hands of a ghostly woman, a young actress who committed suicide in the 1930s after being seduced and then fired by a studio executive. Though the brothers salt and burn her remains, another producer is killed. Sam then notices that the Latin used in the film's script is an actual summoning ritual. The writer, Martin Flagg, tells him that the rituals are from the original script written by production assistant Walter Dixon. They confront Walter, who admits he has been summoning spirits to get revenge against the people he believes ruined his script. He destroys the talisman used in the rituals, but the now free spirits kill him for what he did.
Yeah, that one was a little rough at the end.
I like that the guy just like puts the phone up, like, I can see that he's being mauled by things I can't see, but let me put the phone
just
up.
Just make
so
sure
I can
that it's some
them.
Ghosts.
And then he just slowly puts it down, like.
Well, and that was where I also got confused because, okay, so this episode, obviously I knew it was a ghost, but I wasn't expecting someone using a talisman to use the ghosts to kill people.
Yeah.
I originally thought it was one of those because once we found out that the guy was actually an actor hired by the company to pretend he was dead, I thought that might have kickstarted some ghosts in the studio up.
Yeah.
Who were like, no, don't fuck with us.
Right. We'll get you.
And then I also thought that because that was sounded a little too ritualistically correct when they were reading it, that they might have also kickstarted the ghosts.
Right.
So the kid with the talisman took me by surprise.
Yeah, I thought when the girl was reading that started it, not that there was someone else behind the scenes, like, I got this.
I was real upset to see, you know, Bob from That 70s Show get sashimi'd.
Don Stark. Okay, I have a question about that.
Yeah.
Because from the way that fan looked,
there was should have been blowing backwards?
No, it looked like there was a cage around the front of it.
Yeah,
so
I noticed
theory,
that too.
He could not get sucked in and shot out into little pieces.
Yeah, I thought that too. So that was a question that I had. And then second, the way that it was coming around, it looked like the fan like sucked him in and then spit him back out.
Yeah.
It didn't look like it sucked him in and then kicked him.
Yeah. I don't know.
Also, because I've never seen anyone get chopped up by a big fan like that or a
you
fan
you
at
haven't?
All.
You haven't? You have not seen that before?
Just tiny fans.
You put your finger in?
Yeah. Because it didn't look like the fan was moving at a extreme speed, I wouldn't think he would be that tiny.
You would think his body would have stopped the fan blade.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's a fully grown man.
Yeah. Bob Pinciotti.
Bob Pinciotti.
Without his afro puff.
And tight pants. And even tighter shirts.
Oh, God.
Good old Bob.
I love that show.
Oh.
Just Bob.
But yeah, that was one of the questions I had. And the other one is obviously, so they salt and burn the girl. Is she one of the ghosts that comes back? Or is that a different female ghost?
I don't remember a girl ghost coming back at the end.
Okay, good. Because that would have been my other question, is that, one, they salt and burned the body, so even if he did control them, that spirit wouldn't be there anymore. Not to mention, is he only controlling ghosts that had died at that studio? Because that's a lot of ghosts to die.
Yeah.
In one studio. And it was a little bit of everything, because it looked like you had, like, the maintenance guy who had the, like, fanned out head. You had the actress who hung herself. You had what I thought was, like, it just seemed like it was, like, somebody from, like, the costuming department.
engineering department. Craft services.
Yeah.
Did you notice that when they dug her up, she was buried in her fur?
Oh, yes, with her headpiece.
Mm-hmm.
She was definitely an actress of the times.
This is another episode, though. I don't know if the last... What was the last one we watched?
Heart,
no. But in Tall Tales, this is another episode that has a pervy guy in it.
Yeah.
Like the actress is, like, there in her robe or whatever, and then gets undressed and walks up the steps, and he's not, like, concerned about this at all. He just follows this white woman up the stairs. She kind of looked like, not that she was dead, but, like, she was legit in a black and white movie.
She did.
Yeah. Like, they painted her like she was in a black and white movie.
She looked good.
Apparently to that guy, too.
I did think that there was a little too much cheesiness in this episode for my liking.
Yeah.
Because it was almost too in your face. Like, when they're on the set tour.
The Gilmore Girls?
Yes, that whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, on this side is this place where Gilmore Girls is set, and obviously Sam gets uncomfortable because, like, we know that they're making... That's the only problem that I have with this, is that we know that they're making fun of that and the fact that he was on Gilmore Girls, but why would Sam himself act like that?
Right.
So it's one of those that I wish they would have had more answers to that.
Yeah.
But because we know why, it kind of slides. Same thing with the... I thought this was well done. The end, I think, when they mention Canadian weather.
Yeah, I think that's toward the beginning.
Is that toward the beginning?
Yeah.
I can remember. I just remember I wrote down too many cheesy puns, arrow, mm-hmm. Gilmore Girls set, arrow, Canadian weather.
Yeah.
And I remember them talking about Canadian weather, and I was like, because you're filming in Canada. I get it. Uh-huh.
Because it's legit Canada.
I also want to know where Dean was getting those smoothies.
I don't know, but I love when he had his little headset on, and he's like, I feel like I'm part of the team.
I also want to know, like, how none of those drinks had a name. They didn't say what they were. People were just grabbing random smoothies from a random PA.
But then he set half of them down to walk up the stairs.
Yeah, he just left them. And then he ate all the food. Which, by the way, have you ever been an extra or anything in a movie set?
I have not.
So a lot of the times, there isn't actual food just chilling on set. There's, like, a coffee cart. But extras aren't allowed to take any from it. Some of the crewmen are, but, like, PAs don't really. So that was a little...
I don't know.
And definitely not the fancy food.
Apparently no one on this movie set was paying attention to anything that was going on.
No.
So, I mean...
Random people were just walking in, and I do like the evolution of Dean in this.
Yeah.
In that he went from, like, his usual Dean clothes to getting the headset, getting the walkie-talkie... Now he's wearing the shirt.
Yeah.
And then he's, like, got a name tag and he's all in it and he's holding the script.
He's, like, actually working.
Mm-hmm.
He's answering people. Sam's trying to talk to him. He's like, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, wait, hold on, what? Go for Ozzy.
Yeah.
That was funny.
I did like this episode. How did you feel about it?
I liked it. They brought the EMF meter back in this episode, so that's always nice to see.
They did, and I also liked the tongue-in-cheek in the episode of everything else, in that they're like, Salt's dumb. Why would you shoot a ghost?
Yeah. He's like, what about a rifle? Well, that makes less sense.
And I like the fact that obviously at the end, after the now writer, which I get his changes, because obviously he had to make changes to the script for Hollywood and obviously to fit what they were doing.
Right.
And I love Sam when he was talking to, because Sam had some good points too. And he's like, look, dude, it's just a script. You can write another one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if anything, his name would at least be attached to this to get his name out there.
Right.
Is one way to look at it. And yeah, I get that you put all your life and hard work into this script, but knowing that you had to make these sacrifices could pay off in the end, so that when you write another script, you'd have more say.
Right.
That part made me frustrated when he was like, I'm going to kill everybody associated with this because they fucked up my thing. They broke my toy.
Oh, man.
Taking
my ball and I'm going home.
Yeah, fuck this shit.
I did like when they ran through, they're running away from the ghosts or whatever, they ran to the cabin. Like, they forgot it was a movie set, and they're, like, all up against the door, and they're like, man, what are we going to do? And then, like, Dean turns around, and he's like, oh, come on!
I loved that reaction. That was hilarious. That was one of my favorite parts. I'm just curious, it's like, why the director was like, this is dumb, that doesn't make sense. And then at the end, the director's like, yeah, let's use a phone, because that makes sense. And remember when I said that shotguns were stupid? Let's use that.
So that's a good idea now.
And then at the end, he's like, this is amazing!
Oh, that guy too, like, Bob Pinciotti dies. Or no, but the guy before Bob Pompey, the
executive.
And he's like, you know, really sad about it, but he would have really wanted us to continue with the movie.
Mm-hmm. But not today.
Like,
not
everybody
today.
Else is like, yeah, he would have. He would have wanted us to do that. So we're going to shut down for a day. But tomorrow we're back at it.
I also want to know at what point, if this guy knew all about controlling ghosts and summoning ghosts, at what point he didn't know breaking that talisman was going to fuck his day up?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know shit about that, but I would think that to break it would not be a good idea.
No, because now you have literally nothing to control. Like, that, he just skipped that chapter in the book, went to the next one.
He didn't need that chapter.
Obviously.
You know
what?
That
chapter was rewritten.
That was not in Zach Bagans' book, so he didn't know.
It wasn't. It wasn't, but obviously Sam knew, because Sam, as soon as it happened, was like, oh.
I
wouldn't have done that.
Not a
good
idea.
We're also not going to help you, so.
Hell no. Are you serious? I'm not getting involved. I'm not getting between you and your ghosty minions.
I also like the fact that a movie in which that, like, one fake person died, three actual people died, is still going on.
Yeah. Did you notice, too, that they all died when they went back to, like, the wooded scene?
Yes.
Like, they were all in the fake woods. Don't go to the fake woods!
Which also, like, how big are these fake woods in this sound studio?
I don't know. I thought they were attached to the cabin, which was where everybody was filming. So, come on, people.
And it didn't look like the backdrop behind the water tower was that far away. Come on.
It's probably 6 feet.
6 feet.
It was one Jared Padalecki away.
It was 48 pierogies away.
That's your Pittsburgh social distancing?
Apparently at the airport, they do have 6 feet, and it's like 24 pierogies in length, I guess, to tell people coming into Pittsburgh.
Isn't it also three parking chairs?
Mm, it might be, yeah.
I've seen them do a couple of those.
And then obviously at the end, Dean gets with his actress girl, and they rock the trailer.
Rock the boat.
They were not tipping the boat over.
I'm going to pause for a second and give you the Yinzer social distancing.
Yes.
So these are actually on bus stop benches in Pittsburgh.
Oh, good.
It is 6 feet guide for Yinzers. It is 29 Heinz ketchup bottles, three terrible towels, four Stanley cups, and four parking chairs.
Oh.
In case you were wondering.
Well, just happens to be how many cups we have. Just kidding. I think we have five.
You have to hold the one.
Get the hold one up.
Yeah. Hold the one up. The other one is the distance you have to stay from the other person. Okay. I just thought that was funny.
I love it. All right. So you got some random shit for this episode?
I do.
I would assume I'd be with like all of these famous people.
Yeah, I didn't really talk about them.
Okay.
I had it in here and I took it out. I just didn't feel like it.
That's fine. I was just like, ooh, I know him. Ooh, I've seen him in places.
I know that guy. Okay, so in the beginning of Hollywood Babylon, the Winchesters are on tour of it says on tour of Hollywood. They were on tour of the movie set. The, what do you call that? Studio. Tour of the studio, not the tour of Hollywood.
They were on a lot tour.
On IMDb. Oh, and I misspoke last time. I don't get my plats from IMDb. They're actually from Wikipedia. Just wanted to clear that up. So in the beginning, they are on a lot tour, we will say. The tour guide says that they are passing the place where Gilmore Girls is filmed, and if we're lucky, we might see one of the stars. As we already discussed, and people should probably know, Jared Padalecki played a starring role on Gilmore Girls. He was Dean Forrester, Rory's main squeeze. And at this point, they say Sam Winchester looks uncomfortable and quickly leaves the tour bus. And it wasn't a bus, it was a golf cart. So there's that. I like how I'm critiquing what they wrote down. When Dean mentions that he wanted to come to California for swimming pools and movie stars, which is a line from the theme song to the Beverly Hillbillies, Sam replies that it is not swimming pool weather, it is practically Canadian, clearly because they are in Canada and not Los Angeles.
There it is.
As we have already discussed. When Dean tells Tara she was great in Boogeyman, she says it was a horrible script. The script to Boogeyman, which came out in 2005, was written by Supernatural creator Eric Kripke.
Huh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's why I'm here. I'm dropping knowledge bombs on you.
I have to.
It's going to be The More You Know with Missy. Ooh.
Ooh. That's got a nice little ring to it.
I'm writing it down. I could change it.
Hell yeah.
Some of the notes that the studio executives give the crew are notes that Supernatural actually received from CW. Yeah. So when they're giving all their critiques and everything they want done and things that aren't going to work, those are actual notes that they got on their show. The fact that the main actress likes to take Polaroids of the cast to kill time is a reflection of Jensen Ackles' pastime on set. He takes photos of his fellow cast and crew members between takes.
Hmm.
Yeah. As Sam and Dean are walking through the set to get to the trailer, they pass a lady walking a cart full of clothing that looks awfully familiar. The clothing is used on the set of Supernatural by both actors. Dean is actually wearing the same army brown coat that is on the rack. And when Sam sees the rack, you can see his reaction to it as it passes by.
I thought so, but at the same time, there's a pair of like lime green pants where I'm really confused.
Those are ashes.
Okay, that makes more sense now.
This is the first episode in which Enochian is identified. Sam identifies it when talking to the studio exec about his attention to detail, saying the way you worked all those Enochian summoning rituals in the authentic language. Dot, dot, dot. And that guy's like, what? That Latin crap? I don't know what you're talking about. I thought this was actually kind of cool. In the trailer for Hellraisers 2, there are several scenes from previous Supernatural episodes. The shot of the knife being dipped in blood is from Bloodlust. The shot of the coffin lid and the lining torn and symbols carved on it is from Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. When announced that it is from the producers of Cornfield Massacre, that shot is from Scarecrow. And the monster truck is announced as the shot from Route 666.
Okay, I got the monster truck. I knew that. I was like, that looks familiar.
I saw the Scarecrow one because it's like when they're looking down the tree,
mm-hmm.
You know, in the orchard.
See what you're trying to do here, Supernatural, and I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
But also making use of what you got.
So I found out in this that our beloved Bobby Singer, who we think is named after Bob Singer, who's one of the directors, that's not actually how he got his name.
It isn't?
It says technically the character Bobby Singer was originally, his name was supposed to be Bobby Manners. But finding out there was already a Bobby Manners, they went with Singer. So he isn't written to be named after Bob Singer.
Okay.
I mean, that's what they're saying.
I'll go with it.
I don't agree
with it, but I'll go with it.
I'm not happy about it, but
I'll let them have their day.
We'll see. We'll ask. Yeah, like we can do that.
Let me just write them an email right now.
Yeah. When a take is stopped because of an argument of salt against ghosts, a shotgun is suggested and then rejected as making less sense than salt. The main character, Ash, in The Evil Dead, fights against the dead comeback from hell with a shotgun and a chainsaw. It's also ironic considering the Winchesters use shotguns loaded with rock salt slugs. Thought that was funny, too.
Mm-hmm.
The crew list displayed at the end of Hellraiser's 2 trailer are actual crew members for the episode. The title Hollywood Babylon is taken from an infamous book by Kenneth Anger that allegedly exposed the seamy underside of Hollywood and many famous people in the movie industry. It was banned in the United States for 10 years and the subject of lawsuits as most of its material was poorly sourced.
Sounds about right.
I don't know why I said it says inside joke. During the fake movie trailer to Hellraiser 2, The Reckoning, this film is not yet rated box states, also not written, cast, shot, edited, or scored. Also, it also has a fake website listed as www.hellhazers2.com.
Again, that tongue-in-cheek, man. They get you every time.
Dean references a common ghost story about three men and a baby. The story states that there is a boy who appears in a scene that shouldn't be there, nor could anyone remember the boy ever being on set. Actually didn't occur. The boy was actually a cardboard cutout used as a prop later in the movie.
Huh.
Yeah. I'd heard that one before. None of the actors being portrayed, nor their actual actors, have appeared in the films they are credited in this episode. So neither Tara Benchley nor Elizabeth Whitmer appeared in Ghost Ship, Fear.com, or Boogeyman. And neither Gerald St. James nor R. Nelson Brown appeared in Critters 3 or Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin.
But didn't the girl who played Tara, like, she was in a couple horror movies, including Clown?
Oh, was she?
Mm-hmm. I never watched it because it's a clown.
I don't know.
It's creepy. It's creepy. Like, the picture's creepy. It's good enough for me.
And I'm done.
That's all I need to not watch that movie.
Sorry. Hollywood Babylon is a song by the Misfits.
Mm-hmm.
R. Nelson Brown, who played Frank / Gerard St. James, previously appeared in the 2005 film Devour as a tattoo artist alongside Jensen Ackles.
Yes.
And I have one goof. It's not really a goof. They just didn't do their research. While Sam and Dean are on the studio tour, Dean states that the movie Creepshow was filmed there. It wasn't. Creepshow was filmed primarily in Pittsburgh, in this Pittsburgh surrounding area. Box Chapel, right down the street.
And little known fact, my friend's mom designed the monster at the end.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
Yeah, she did. That monster that's like in the box?
Yeah.
Yeah, my friend Haley's mom designed it.
Cool. And not to leave out New Jersey, some scenes were filmed there too.
I guess we can share.
I mean, whatever.
Rude. Didn't Dean also like, quote, die hard in this? When they were like digging up the body? Yeah, let's go to the West Coast, have some fun.
Oh, there's yeah, he did. I had that in my notes originally, and then I cut it out.
Oh, I caught it because I like Die Hard.
I also, to get back to that, did they wait for her to, did they wait for the fire to go down when they burn people?
I don't know.
Because it's a pretty big blaze that they set, and I was just wondering if they walked away from the cemetery with her still on fire, or if they waited for it to go out.
I feel like we'll answer that with the next one because they kind of do like the cool guys don't look at explosions thing.
Walk away. Okay, that's all I have for you.
All right. All right, so I focused on haunted Hollywood.
Ooh.
I looked for some theaters that are potentially haunted as well as some actors since obviously in this one we had some haunted studio ghosts, some of which were actors and people who worked on set.
Yeah.
So it's not a full list. Obviously, if you ever go to Hollywood, you can take a tour of all the haunted locations. And I didn't focus on people who haunt their own houses. And I didn't actually even mention like the Roosevelt Hotel.
Okay.
Cause I didn't feel like it was. And the same thing with the Black Dahlia. I don't bring her up. I mean, I guess I could talk about her. I know enough information to add her to this list, but she supposedly haunts the one house.
I hear Marilyn Monroe's everywhere.
Supposedly, she is one of the most sought-after ghosts, because obviously in my research, I read all about haunted Hollywood.
Her in, I listened to a lot of Ghost Magnet with Bridget Marquardt, and she always says it, and now I can't remember. Oh, well. Okay, sorry.
No, you're good. So some of the big ones I got that I'm not going to talk about that I will touch on just in case anyone is curious, you can look it up yourself, are people like Lucille Ball. She supposedly haunts her house. Supposedly, do I have a minute or no? Montgomery Cliff is supposedly seen in the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, mostly in like room 928. Joan Crawford haunts her house. James Dean doesn't necessarily haunt anything, but there's a curse tied to his car, which obviously we'll get to in another episode.
Yeah.
So I don't talk about him. I'm not talking about Marilyn Monroe. I'm not going to talk about Clark Gable, who supposedly he and his wife, Carol Lombard, are said to haunt the Oatman Hotel in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jean Harlow is also another one, who supposedly haunts her home along with the husband who killed her.
Oh.
Yeah, it wasn't great. She was beaten to death.
Oh, I did not know that.
Well, she died. She died of kidney failure.
Okay.
Which partially was also from a childhood illness, but also it was made worse by the frequent beatings her husband gave her.
Oh my god.
And supposedly they haunt together.
That would not be happy. That is not a happy haunt.
No. Obviously, Harry Houdini is another one that some people try to find.
Sorry, Rudy Valentino. That's the one I was thinking of. He's apparently supposed to be everywhere. Even places that were built after he died.
She's just checking him out, you know.
He's like, I would have liked this. I would have liked this when I was alive.
Marilyn Monroe. She's mainly seen, sometimes like hovering above her tomb. Also, she's another one that frequents the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. I'm not going to really talk about Elvis Presley too much, but supposedly he haunts some buildings in Nashville. George Reeves, who played Superman, supposedly mm-hmm. haunts his bedroom in Superman gear.
I mean, why not wear the tights?
Clifton Webb supposedly haunts his grave. Rudolph Valentino, like you said, he's been sighted at his resting place as well as a bunch of other places. Supposedly John Wayne haunts his yacht.
What? John Wayne misses his boat?
Apparently, yeah, because a lot of people who see him or feel him don't feel like he's trapped there. They don't feel like he can't move on. He just comes and goes because he really liked his yacht.
Oh, okay.
Orson Welles supposedly haunts Sweet Lady Jane's restaurant.
Was it his favorite place to eat?
he loved to eat. So okay. Apparently Sweet Lady Jane's has great food and exquisite desserts.
Exquisite desserts. I'm sold.
But the ones that I do want to talk about that I have notes on are, I'll start with one of my favorites because, like I said, I really enjoy classic Hollywood and classic Hollywood monsters. And supposedly Lon Chaney is one of the ghosts that supposedly haunts stage or soundstage 28 at Universal Studios. So Lon Chaney, he's most famous for being both an American stage actor and film actor, as well as makeup artist, director, and screenwriter. He was born April 1st, 1883 in Colorado Springs. He's most famous for The Hunchback of Notre Dame, London After Midnight, The Phantom of the Opera, a lot of like early Hollywood movies. His real name is Creighton Tull Chaney.
How do you get Lon?
Oh, sorry, that's his son. Lon Chaney Jr. So Creighton Tull Chaney is Lon Chaney's junior, which is Lon Chaney's son. And so obviously his real name's Creighton, but I guess to follow in his father's footsteps, because he did follow in his father's footsteps to be an actor, took up the stage name Lon Chaney Jr.
Okay.
Lon Chaney, his real name is Leonidas Chaney.
Leonidas.
Yes. And obviously he shortened it to Lon. So Lon Chaney died August 26, 1930, suddenly of a throat hemorrhage.
Throat hemorrhage.
Not a good way to go.
That hurt my throat right there.
So he supposedly haunts Soundstage 28 at Universal Studios, which was actually demolished in 2014. But this particular soundstage was used to film Phantom of the Opera that was released in 1925. And supposedly some of the things that happened to cause, that he caused with the haunting, were that lights would turn off and on, doors would open and close on their own, and people claimed to have seen his caped figure wearing the cape from the Phantom of the Opera running along the catwalks. Another famous actor who haunts where he was is Red Fox, aka Sanford of Sanford and Son. He died October 11th, 1991, after suffering a heart attack on set, and is said to haunt stage 31 at Paramount Studios, which is actually where he suffered his heart attack. He didn't die in there, but he was taken to the hospital, but supposedly he haunts the soundstage where he had his heart attack. And things people claim to experience are hearing his laughter at jokes and him just hanging out.
Chilling.
But he's also another one that is said to not only haunt stage 31, but also haunt his Las Vegas home. So he just checks in and sees something's funny and is like, yeah, this is good. I'll stay and watch this, and then goes home, I guess.
He's like, ha ha ha. Okay, gotta go back.
Now, this one is kind of sad. Victor Killian. He was famous for the show Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman. He played the Fernwood Flasher, and he died March 11th, 1979. He was actually beaten to death in his Lido apartment.
Oh, man.
The sadder part is that the murder is still unsolved.
No.
And it's said that he can be seen walking the forecourt of the TCL Chinese Theater, and some people have claimed to actually see him walking from his apartment to the theater, which isn't that far, claiming that he's looking for his murderer.
Oh, man. He's not at rest.
Not at all.
Oh.
So not only did he suffer a violent death, but his case is still unsolved.
Yeah.
And the even crazier part is that 5 days before this, another guy not that far from his house was also murdered.
Oh, come on.
So another pretty well-known guy, I'm sure you've heard of him once or twice, Howard Hughes.
Who's that guy?
Who's that guy?
Who's that guy? I don't know.
Who's Howard Hughes? I've never heard that name before.
Let me get on the Google machine and look that up.
Let me just Google him.
Google.
Google. So Howard Robarb Hughes Jr.
Robarb.
He was an investor. He was a pilot. He was a film director and a philanthropist. He helped create a bunch of movies as well as buy a bunch of theaters. So he died April 5th, 1976 on a plane due to a sparse diet and an excess of drugs. Ironically.
He wasn't flying the plane, was he?
He was not flying the plane.
Okay.
He was actually being flown to receive treatment.
Okay.
For his excessive diet and use of drugs. He struggled very hard with an eating disorder and focusing on what he was eating and that kind of stuff. But he is said to haunt the Pantage Theater, which he actually purchased in 1949 and built an office in the second floor. People say that they have seen his apparition near his old office, felt unexplained cold spots and gusts of wind, have heard desk drawers rattling, and have smelled cigarette smoke.
Ooh.
Now, this one I threw in here because she's not necessarily an actress, as more of an entertainer, but she supposedly haunts her soundstage. Karen Carpenter.
Okay.
She was a famous singer as a part of a duo with her brother. She became very famous on her own as well, but she struggled very hard with an eating disorder and eventually succumbed to it. She died February 4th, 1983 of ipecac poisoning.
Oh.
And it said that she haunts the Jim Henson Company Entertainment Complex and can be seen in the dressing room area of the soundstage, but is never seen leaving the room.
Ooh.
And then the last one that I wanted to talk about, and it's not necessarily because she haunts a soundstage or anything like most of these guys, but it's because she's the most famous actress supposedly haunting the area in which she died, is Peg Entwistle. So Peg Entwistle died September 16th, 1932 at the age of 24 years old.
Oh.
She, through excess drinking and depression, decided to take her life by jumping off of the H of the Hollywood sign, which at the time read Hollywood Land.
Mm.
what had led up to this was that she was in a movie that, due to rules at the time, her part got cut down from what it should have been, which was a large part of the film, to almost non-existent, and RKO declined to renew her contract, so she decided to commit suicide and was found by a hiker 2 days later after noticing a jacket, a woman's shoe, and a suicide note.
Oh.
People who hike near the Hollywood sign, because obviously you can't go up to the Hollywood sign anymore, experience a smell of a strong smell of gardenia perfume, which supposedly was her favorite perfume, as well as see a blonde spirit, especially on foggy nights. And there have actually been stories of people going up and like interacting with the spirit and her seeming disoriented and then just disappearing. Or she'll climb the Hollywood H.
How did she get all the way up there?
So before this happened, so Hollywood Land was actually, it wasn't made for Hollywood. Hollywood actually had to fight to keep the sign up.
But I mean, is there like scaffolding and stuff that you can actually climb up the ladder?
Yes, on okay. the back. There's okay. a maintenance ladder, which is what she took up to the top.
Okay.
And it originally, like I said, said Hollywood Land. The mm-hmm. land was removed in 1945 because it was too difficult to maintain. Mm-hmm. It was originally supposed to be an advertisement for a housing development in the Los Angeles district that was called Hollywood Land. But as wear and tear took on it, it became too expensive. And at one point, supposedly, the H fell.
Oh.
Which some people attribute to Peg Entwistle.
She just knocked it down.
Well, they say that it was knocked over by heavy winds
mm-hmm.
in 1944. But obviously some people think that because it was where she jumped, that she took it down. What ended up happening is that the Chamber of Los Angeles, or the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce, drew up a contract with the Los Angeles Parks Department to repair and rebuild it, but that meant that they had to cut the land, so it was just Hollywood, which would then reflect the district and not the housing development that it was made for. And then obviously, as the years have gone on, we've seen like Hollyweed
Hollyweird.
And that kind of stuff. Yeah. So also one little thing I did want to talk about was that obviously not only are there ghosts that haunt supposedly these sound stages, but also that there have been some cursed sets. The biggest one obviously being The Exorcist. Things that have happened that caused them to think that the set was cursed are that there was a fire that first off caused a delay in filming to begin with that actually burned down the house in which Regan lived in, but her room was untouched. Ellen Burstyn, who plays Regan's mother, was actually injured when Regan throws her to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Jack McGowan and Vasiliki Malouros died in post-productions, and both of their characters die in the film. Mercedes McCambridge, who is the demonic voice of Pazuzu, her son was murdered, or his son murdered his wife and children before committing suicide.
Holy crap.
Those are just some things that happened on the set of The Exorcist for people who were involved that make people think that it is a cursed set.
Just a couple, just a few.
The funniest part is in doing my research, I was like, ooh, I wonder if there are any cursed sets out there. Only like most horror movies.
Yeah.
So another one that is believed to be cursed from the beginning is The Omen.
Okay.
So special effects designer John Richards' wife, Liz Moore, was actually decapitated in a head-on collision that he was driving in.
Oh my God.
Which is exactly a scene out of The Omen.
Yeah.
Three times, planes carrying cast and crew got struck by lightning.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Three times it was struck by lightning in three separate occasions. And let me see if I can figure this out. Which is funny because obviously another set that happened to is The Passion of the Christ. When the guy playing Jesus was put on the cross, he was struck by lightning.
Was he really?
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that, is that Jim Caviezel?
Yes.
Struck by light? I did not know that.
Also in the scene where Gregory Peck, is it where Gregory Peck is running away from vicious dogs, the stuntman who trained the dogs not only bit through the stuntman's protective gear, but also would not stop when they were told by their trainer. They lost their minds on set.
Oh my God.
The cast and crew also survived not one, but two bombings of IRA.
What in the hell? Like, come on.
So those are just some reasons that people believe that the set of The Omen is haunted.
I would have to agree. Like, there's a curse on that shit.
And then obviously, the other one that people believe was cursed is the set of The Crow.
Yeah, I was just talking to somebody about that the other day.
Which I found out in doing my research, something interesting, that The Crow was actually created after Obar read a story about a couple in Detroit being murdered for a $20 engagement ring. Mm. And that's how he built the story of The Crow. And also from the fact that, sadly, James Obar's fiance was killed by a drunk driver. So the fact that he lost his fiance, as well as reading this story, created The Crow. But obviously the biggest part that leads people to think that the set was cursed was the fact that the actor playing Eric Draven, Brandon Lee, was actually shot and killed during filming as an accident.
Yeah.
And there was a bunch of stuff that led up to this actually happening. Basically, that the filming was already a week behind schedule. The person who was serving as the weapon master on the film actually was told he was no longer needed and therefore wasn't on set to prevent the accident from happening. And blanks were loaded by the prop master into the gun, but a slug had become lodged in the barrel when the gun had been dry fired earlier. And the blank actually propelled the slug out, which is what ended up killing Brandon Lee.
They actually took, they had actual bullets and they didn't have time to make proper blanks out of them. So they put the, whatever powder they used for the blank in the bullet, but they instead of having the other cap on the top of it, it still had the metal piece on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got stuck.
And what's even worse is Michael Massey was actually chosen at random that night. Mm-hmm. Who was the one to shoot him. Like, his character wasn't written to shoot him. It was a character, mm-hmm. and they changed it up, and Michael Massey's character happened to get chose that night, and the gun wasn't tested before it was brought in,
mm-hmm.
and that he was actually so traumatized by playing Fun Boy and being the one to kill Brandon Lee that he actually took a year off of acting.
Oh, I don't blame him. That would have messed me up for life.
He still apparently has nightmares and can't even actually bring himself to watch the finished version of the movie.
I mean, how could you? Like, I mean, in no way was it your fault, but still, like, I don't know. I was obsessed with that movie for a long time.
So this is some of the reasons that lead to it being cursed. So one, that happened. Two, that Massey, who was obviously the one to shoot Lee in the abdomen, which sadly, had it been less well aimed, Lee could have survived.
Mm-hmm.
Massey actually passed away in 2016 of stomach cancer.
Mm.
And one of the scenes, the night that Eric returns home to find his fiance being attacked by that gang, mm-hmm. which is where the character Eric, is killed. He was actually supposed to marry his own fiance a month later that month. February 1st, on the very first day of filming, a carpenter suffered serious burns all over his body when live power lines collided with a crane he was in. That same day, a publicist working on the film was in a car accident, and an equipment trunk mysteriously caught fire. A crew member has fallen through a roof, broke several ribs, while one put a screwdriver through his hand.
Oh.
A truck drove through the set. And then March 13th, a storm destroyed several sets, costing thousands of dollars in damages. And then ironically, on the day of Lee's death, or the accident that led to it, Entertainment Weekly ran an article listing all of the accidents from that set. entitling it Bird of Ill Omen. So those are all reasons that they believe that that set is cursed. And then obviously there's been issues later on, and now they want to remake it, but obviously no one wants to jump on for it, and his family's fighting it.
Yeah, I read that too. I don't think they should remake it.
I also agree that they should not remake it. But that's all I got for you. I got cursed sets and haunted ghosts.
Well, way to end it on a sad note, Liz.
Oh, don't worry. We still got a whole nother episode to talk about.
I have chills. I love that movie, The Crow.
Oh, it's one of my favorites. All-time favorites. It Can't Rain All the Time.
Ugh. So good.
And on that note, shall we shimmy on over to some Folsom Prison Blues?
Let's go get incarcerated.
All right. Episode 19. I mean, that's what Dean thought. And Sam was just like, fuck it, this is a bad idea.
But he went along with it.
Because he probably, maybe, sorta, it's going to work. So episode 19, Folsom Prison Blues, came out April 26th. 2007, and is set in Little Rock, Arkansas, and Green River County Detention Center.
Fun fact, not a real place.
What? Yep. Supernatural lied to me.
Not necessarily lied, just not a real place. In case you were wondering.
Okay, fine.
The more you know with Missy. Okay, so Uncle Joey and our friend Jessica are pretty... Yeah, they're close again. Jessica from Decider.com ranks this episode 121.
Okay.
They both have, like, one-sentence things about this episode, too. So clearly they didn't care to write enough about it.
I mean, there was some about this episode, but pretty much it was kind of like a take-it-or-leave-it episode, especially following something like Hollywood Babylon. Like, you just had a ghost, now you have a ghost.
Right. Back-to-back, but poor planning on their part.
Yeah, they should have at least tossed, I don't know, like, another werewolf in there, I don't know.
Yeah, bring us a... Jefferson Starship.
Oh, so I get to name it?
That's what you named it? So 121, she says, the boys go to prison to solve a case. New environment and new outfits mean a lot of fun. New outfits.
New outfits. You mean they're prison jumpsuits?
Yes. Orange.
Okay.
Uncle Joey ranked it 141. He says, and I don't know why he just says Sam. He says Sam goes undercover. Like, Dean wasn't there at all. Like, Dean didn't do most of it.
This is Dean's idea. So he was enjoying prison life a little too much.
So apparently, just Sam goes undercover in a prison to track a ghost, claustrophobic and suspenseful. But again, Dean nowhere to be found. He was getting into it. Like, last episode, he was really into being the PA. This episode, he's really into being in jail. And even Sam says at one point, like, dude, does it bother you, like, how well you fit in here? And Dean's like, no, I'm fine. I have a plot. Are you ready for a plot?
I am ready.
Following a tip from their father's Marine buddy, Deacon, Sam and Dean... Oh, Dean's here! In this
oh,
plot,
good. At least he recognizes it.
Sam and Dean deliberately get themselves arrested in Arkansas to investigate a string of murders in a recently reopened cell block. However, FBI agent Hendrickson shows up and attempts to extradite them. Their public defender, Mara Daniels, believes that they have been falsely accused of many crimes, but says they could only stall extradition for a week. To create a distraction in order to allow Sam to destroy what they believe to be a spirit, Who's Dan? When did Dan come into this story?
Wait.
It says Dean. Says D-E-A-N. But I just said Dan.
Theme. You didn't even say damn.
Damn gets into a fight with a prisoner. Okay.
He gets into a fight with a couple prisoners. Between that and, like, conning cons out of cigarettes, that's, like, Dean's favorite thing to do.
Okay. Dean gets into a fight with a fellow prisoner. However, the vengeful spirit of a nurse attacks Dean in the infirmary, proving that they were wrong about the ghost's identity. He defends himself with salt, but she kills the other prisoner. Research reveals that it is Nurse Glockner, who used to kill infirmary patients and was later killed in a riot. She kills anyone who has committed a crime, regardless of how minor it is. Dean convinces Mara to locate where Glockner was buried, and the brothers decide to follow their escape plan. After getting into a fight with one another, they are taken by a guard, Deacon. He helps them to escape. When Hendrickson learns that Mara supplied the Winchesters with information, he forces her to tell him where she sent them. As the brothers dig up Glockner's body and then salt and burn her remains, the FBI arrive at the wrong cemetery, having been lied to by Mara. The Winchesters dispatch Glockner in time to save Deacon and realize that they are in more trouble than ever now. Realize they are in more trouble than ever before now. Trouble than ever before now.
I think you could have just said ever before. I don't think you need the now on there.
I don't think you do either. And I read through these before. I couldn't get it, Dan.
I do have to say that I remember the first time I watched this, I did not know that that guard was Deacon.
Nope, me either.
At all.
I did not know.
And I even watched it knowing that, and I'm like, he's good. I would not, up until this moment, know that that was Deacon. Especially the way they were talking about Deacon.
Yeah, they never, even hinted at that he was in the prison.
No.
Or anything. I just thought it was some guy on the outside.
Which is also crazy, because then it leads me to wonder, okay, so is Deacon also not only a prison guard, but, also a hunter? Or is he just a good friend of their dad's who, knows about hunters?
They made it seem to be that he was just a Marine buddy of John's that kind of knew what John did.
Yeah.
That's what I got from it. I didn't think that he was, because if he was, why wouldn't he do it himself?
There were so many, good little entwines, because obviously from the beginning, I knew they got caught on purpose. Hendrickson said.
It was so, so fake.
They literally, focused on the motion sensor and them just not caring.
Yeah. Oh, we walked through it. Okay.
Guess the alarm's going to go off now. Probably shouldn't run.
Oh, crap. Let's walk slowly down the hallway. See what's going on. They heard a noise and they walked to it.
And they're like, oh, no, there's cops. Quick. Turn. Pivot. Oh, no, there's someone there. We're caught. Pivot.
I just say to say, though, from the very beginning when they're like, we're reopening this cell block. That's not good news. Nothing good can come from that. And why all of a sudden are you like, hey, this sounds like a good idea. We closed it for a reason, but you know what? Let's just bring it back.
Well, didn't they say that they were planning on reopening it for more inmates?
But it was sealed for a reason.
Because that's the block that the one nurse got. No, she got beaten in the infirmary, didn't she?
I don't remember. She got killed in a riot, but that's where the crazy guy was.
Yeah. The one who got literally beaten to a pulp.
Yeah. But hey, I mean, I guess it's been long enough. Let's open it back up.
It's fine.
It's fine. Everything's fine. We're fine.
Construction never hurt anything and definitely didn't stir up any spirits. This is a good idea.
Especially no one ever.
Especially in what I assume to be the most violent block.
Yeah. Clearly not a good place.
I did feel for the guard, because when they first introduced him, he was kind of not paying attention to the camera when obviously the ghost first appeared.
Yeah.
And the one inmate's like, hey, guard! Hey, guard!
Yeah.
And then he was receptive, and he was like, go to bed, I'm turning the lights out, everyone else is fine, and then he got his arm fucked up.
Can I tell you that my ass would not be telling them to shut the lights off in the cell block until I was out of there?
Did we also find out, if that guy had a bad rap, that security guard? Because it seemed like, especially... when she finally attacked Deacon, she did it for people who had a bad background.
Yeah, I think that they found out that he wasn't as clean as they thought
he was. Oh, that's right. That's right.
The prison guard. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she got on Deacon because he let them out.
Which I was surprised. If she was fucking paying attention, she realized that they were caught in the system anyway.
Yeah.
And then why was she going for Dean? Was it because he picked a fight? Was she going to go after the other guy, too?
Probably.
Because she went after the other ones that Dean fought.
Poor Tiny.
Poor Tiny.
I was kind of sad to see Tiny go.
I was. I think he was just using his height and weight as confidence.
He was a gentle giant. Confidence. Gentle giant, Tiny was.
What else? Oh, and this is one of the one episodes that I couldn't remember. I still don't, to the end of the episode, can't figure out if Mara is with them or if she really is just a lawyer or where she stands. Because for a while, when she first showed up, I was like, oh, Bobby probably sent her.
That's what I thought too.
And she knows. And then she and Dean went in and he was asking for all these things and she seemed really confused. And at that point, I was like, maybe she really is a lawyer.
Yeah.
But then at the end, when she did the switcheroo, I was like, but wait, is she?
I think when she did that, though, she knew the thing, because she had looked into all their charges and everything, and she knew that things were fishy and they didn't add up.
So you think she's just a lawyer?
I think she's just a lawyer, but she has a soft spot for them, or thinks that they're not guilty because when she was like doing all that stuff, it just wasn't adding up to what Hendrickson's saying they did.
Well, not to mention, Hendrickson's got a hard-on for these boys. Like, from the beginning, not to mention, like, how he talked to her about them.
Yeah.
And this is the first time that they actually meet Hendrickson.
Right.
Because they only had that phone call.
Mm-hmm.
And found out about him.
In the bank.
So I wonder if the voice matches the face.
Nope, it doesn't. Did you notice at the end when they found Glockner's grave and they, you know, burned her and everything, she went out pretty quick. Like, when she was on Deacon, she was, like, up. But there's some of them that, like, slowly burn away. Like, in Roadkill, Greeley was, like, a slow burn. Like, that guy was not going away. But she was, like, real quick, boom, she's gone.
Maybe it was the amount of anger, the rage, and the ghost.
Oh, I never thought of that.
I don't know if that's a reason, but I'm going to go with it.
You shouldn't have said that because it sounded good to me.
Hey. But this is one of those ones that when you asked if they stay around when they burn the body, like part of me wonders, because obviously you'd think, unless you want to ask, like, leave a lot of questions, you have to cover up the grave again.
Yeah, like put all the dirt back in.
So that makes me wonder also if there's a time frame. You're like, ghosts have to burn for 3 minutes before you can put them out.
Yeah.
Or if they have to completely go down, or if, like, you wait and then you just start putting dirt back on there, puts the fire out, and then you leave.
Yeah.
Because they were in and out of that cemetery with Glockner real fast.
Yeah.
Especially, like, when they did the switcheroo, which I did not know because of the way that they had filmed it. I really thought Sam and Dean were going to be in trouble.
I did, too. I thought, holy crap, she told them the right cemetery because she was afraid of getting in trouble, and they're screwed.
And then they panned up to a different cemetery, and I was like, oh, yes! And then it cuts to her, and she's got that little smile.
Yeah, she gets in her car.
Go, Mara, I like you. You're my lawyer when I need one.
Can I call you? Can I have your card?
She's going to get a 5-star review on that one. 10 out of 10 would recommend.
This is the public defender you want.
Hell yeah, she works for you. Not for the man.
The man.
The man.
Does she point at you in her commercials like Edgar Snyder?
I don't think so. I think she's more of a, like, a D-U-G-A-N.
I was just going to say that. Dugan and Dugan.
Also, I mean, I've never been in a jail, but, like...
Hey, me either.
Because look at us go. I feel like the cafeteria setting is slightly off.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I feel bad because I think prisons get this rap about, like, having really bad food. But I don't think it's as bad as they make it out to be.
Dean ate it.
Dean seemed to be fine with it. It was not on, except for, like, the al dente part. He wanted his pasta with a little bite. That's all. Also, the fact that there were, like, so many guards watching all the crew that, like, Sam was so easily able to get out there. Not to mention, this prison has a fucking air duct big enough to fit him.
Yeah.
Comfortably.
Yeah, I don't know.
I question that part. A lot.
Yeah.
But I liked this episode. Like I said, it had some stuff that I didn't think... It surprised me, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. In that, like, I thought they were going to get caught with the cemetery, and it wasn't the right cemetery. I had no idea that was Deacon.
Mm-hmm. You mean the twist and turn and twist again?
Yes! It was very twisty. It was like a corkscrew episode.
Ooh!
Yes.
Like a curly fry.
Kind of, yeah.
We were talking about food.
It's the curly fry in your regular fries.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's got the twist, but yeah. And you're surprised by it because you like it.
Yeah. You're like, oh, what is this treat I got here.
Mm-hmm.
This present. Is it my birthday?
Yes.
It might be.
And then obviously I like the title of this episode.
Yes. Good old Johnny Cash.
Exactly. The Man in Black.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go wrong.
My mom did not like Johnny Cash. And my dad loves Johnny Cash.
Oh.
So he would play it all the time and she would get mad. She's right behind me. Right there.
I've been to the Johnny Cash Museum twice.
I have not been there.
I cried the first time because the way they have it set up is just, oh my gosh, the end hits you. But anyway, you got some random shit for us? Or do you got any more thoughts on this episode?
I don't have any more thoughts.
All right. But you got some random shit, though.
I do.
Good. Because if you don't, you're fired.
Oh, shit. Who's going to take over?
You're irreplaceable.
Oh, I think so.
Yes.
I think I am.
I mean, I know it.
Right here. So Cliff Kosterman, who plays Tiny, is the real-life longtime bodyguard of Jensen and Jared. And the three men are actually really close friends. And I found out today through someone else's tweet that if you want to follow him, his Instagram handle is bodyguard13.
So does he like bodyguard, but like, is it like one goes and he bodyguards that guy and like, or does he just, they travel as a trio?
I think that they are a three-man wolf pack and they travel together.
Oh.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sorry, that was the she-wolf pack.
That was the she-wolf pack.
My bad.
Theirs is a little deeper, but same thing. Yeah.
Yes.
But I thought that was funny. So Tiny is their bodyguard.
That's awesome.
While in prison, Dean says to Sam, "You from Texas all of a sudden?" And clearly we know that Jensen and Jared are both from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Jensen actually celebrated his birthday, which is March 1st, on location at the prison set during filming of this episode. So at the beginning of the day, the 50 extras dressed as prisoners sang happy birthday to him in the prison yard.
That's awesome.
And we just mentioned that the episode's title is named after a Johnny Cash song, but the song is not used in this episode.
It isn't. Alice in Chains is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When Dean stands up, hands full of cigarettes, and shouts, "Hey, fellas, who's ready to deal?" You can see Jared grinning and mouthing the lines along while Jensen's saying them.
I'm going to have to watch that because that's adorable.
I know. I have to go back. I read this after, and I was like, did he really do that?
I mean, I'm not even mad about it. I just want to watch it.
No, I know. I was watching Outtakes the other day, and like when it's Jared's back to the camera, and it's just people constantly, like, just busting out laughing. Because, you know, he just sits there and does those faces at people.
Mm-hmm.
While they're, like, trying to do the lines from their angle. Hilarious.
Love it.
While taking pictures for his mugshot, Dean uses the blue steel pose, which is used by Derek Zoolander in the movie Zoolander. Dean is not wearing his amulet or ring when arrested, obviously anticipating his belongings being confiscated in prison. It also said that this is the first episode where there isn't the Impala, but it's at the end of the episode, so I don't know how it's not in the episode.
Mm, yeah, that's weird. She definitely was there, because he even made a mention about how it was nice to see her.
Yeah, like they get out and they get in it and drive away, so I don't. I took it out of my notes, but I felt like I had to say it, because it's wrong.
Yeah.
I'm proving things wrong today.
Incorrect. We're fact-checking as we go.
I am Snopes. Not really. Some of the charges laid against Dean are mail fraud, credit card fraud, grave desecration, armed robbery, kidnapping, 3 counts of first-degree murder, and breaking and entering. In case you wanted the rundown.
I did.
Dean says, yeah, that guy moves a little faster than I thought. Look, all we got to do is find this ghost, put the sucker down, then grab ourselves a couple of teardrop tattoos.
I immediately thought of Crybaby.
Oh, yeah. In prison, teardrop tattoos signify that an individual has murdered someone or has had someone close to them murdered. It originated with gangs in California In this episode, it can be taken as a reference to an old movie of Johnny Depp's called Crybaby, where his character received a teardrop tattoo when he was in prison as a representation of his attitude towards crying. He would only cry one tear when something bothered him, and that was it.
One single salty tear.
That's all I have for you today.
All right.
That's all my knowledge bombs.
So I actually focused on, to tie in with my haunted Hollywood, some haunted prisons.
Ooh, any around here?
Kind of, actually. There are two within distance. Three within distance, two not, that I've been to.
Not walking distance.
Not walking distance, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, it might take you a little bit, but the county jail's haunted.
True. So we'll start with Missouri State Penitentiary, which is located in Jefferson City, Missouri, and it ran from about the 1830s to 2004. It earned the nickname the bloodiest 47 acres in America due to how many violent outbreaks took place inside the prison itself. 40 inmates were executed inside its gas chamber while it was operating, and some of the people experience, both staff and visitors, dozens of eerie encounters with lingering spirits of both guards and inmates.
I should put some ghost noises in this part.
There's the Wyoming Territorial Prison in Laramie, Wyoming. It was built in 1873 after the expansion of the railroad brought a, quote, flood of unsavory characters.
An entire flood of them?
A flood of them, because okay. The railroad gave them easy access. Their most famous inmate is Butch Cassidy, who was incarcerated in there from 1894 to 1896. It housed well over 1,000 inmates during operation. And the most famous specter that is talked about is Julius Greenwald, who actually used to make and sell cigars while incarcerated for the murder of his wife.
Oh.
And visitors cite the smell of cigars within the facility, even though it was closed in 1903.
Hmm.
Another one that this one is close to us is the West Virginia Penitentiary in Moundsville, West Virginia, or Moundsville, Ohio, whichever one you want to go with.
I've been there.
I actually have not been to this one, but my one coworker just got a job as their night tour.
I have taken a daytime tour, and I also went for their haunted attraction.
Ooh, well, we should go for their night tour, and I'll make Alyssa show us around.
Yes. Tell her I want to go to places you're not allowed to go.
She might let it happen.
Like the warden's office.
But not on this. She follows the rules. She's an amazing person.
No, I mean, totally. She would never do that.
Cut this part out. Okay.
She's a rule follower, and we just went where we were supposed to.
Best tour guide ever.
5-star review.
So the West Virginia Penitentiary was open for 129 years. It housed thousands of inmates and saw multiple deaths through both suicide and violent outbreaks. It housed Old Sparky, which was the electric chair, and The Hole, which was the brutal solitary confinement area that was supposedly driven inmates to insanity. This is one of the most sought out haunted locations for ghost hunters, and some of the claims include hearing ghostly footsteps, voices and noises with no explanation, cold chills, and the overwhelming of fear, feeling of panic.
Mm-hmm. Another famous piece of evidence that they have from there is the Shadow Man. The picture of the Shadow Man at the end of the hallway. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That actually has like the head and the shoulders and the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a full body. It's crazy.
There's the Pottawatomie County Jail in Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Pottawatomie. I like it.
It is the old Pottawatomie County Jail.
Not the new one.
It is not, but it is unique.
Okay.
So this one's kind of cool. I actually looked it up. It's got 3 tiers with 10 cells on each tier that are intended to rotate consistently throughout the night mm-hmm. by the means of a water wheel in the basement, which means that all the prisoners could be continuously watched from one central location for the guard.
Isn't that called a squirrel cage?
Yes, it earned the nickname the Squirrel Cage Jail.
Look at me. I know.
However, the stone was too heavy to turn as intended. And also one inmate died in his cell because of it, and his body was trapped for days.
Ooh, yucky.
Doors were eventually carved into all of the cells, and there were a few other deaths in the prison, including that of an officer who accidentally shot himself while protecting the facility from an angry mob. And he's one of the ghosts that is soon supposedly haunting the prison.
Oh.
There is the Lake County Jail in Crown Point, Indiana. It is believed to have been escape-proof due to its construction. However, they were proven wrong by a very famous mobster by the name of John Dillinger, who broke out on March 3rd, 1934.
Oh, is that the jail he broke out of?
Yes, he broke out of the escape-proof jail.
Well, I mean, he had some inside help.
He did. and this jail actually remained in operation until the 1970s when it was shut down, and actually has begun restoration to become a historical site.
Oh, okay.
But due to restoration, people have noticed apparitions being spotted in cells, doors opening and closing on their own, lights turning off and on, and footsteps and voices being heard by both visitors and volunteers, as well as those working on the restoration. Then there is the Ohio Penitentiary in Columbus, Ohio. This poor jail saw way more death than a lot of the other ones, because there were deaths from fire, murder, executions, in the electrical chair, which took place from like 1834 to 1979, cholera outbreaks.
Wow.
In fact, 322 inmates were killed in a single night in 1930 when a fire broke out in the west block of the penitentiary, trapping all of the inmates and killing them.
Oh my God.
Even when the prison was in operation, inmates complained of ghostly sightings.
Ooh.
The building has since been torn down. However, people still say that they see apparitions within the ruins of the place. And it actually is now the sports arena.
Oh.
which is also supposedly haunted by the inmates that died.
Okie dokie then. I mean, why not build that there?
Then we also, apparently Ohio is just like the hot spot for prisons. I don't know if that was just for fun or if there's some other thing. Maybe I should look that up. But there is also the Ohio State Reformatory.
Is that the in Mansfield?
It is. And it's where the Shawshank Redemption was filmed. The Ohio State Reformatory was open from 1896 to 1986, which I found interesting that it was just the same numbers, just flip-flop.
Yeah, it just flipped around.
It was originally believed to be a humane prison where inmates could be rehabilitated and then released. However, it then became known as a place for torture, abuse, and murder. And it was so much so that inmates actually filed a lawsuit describing
really?
How inhabitable and how dangerous it was to be in this prison. So you can take a tour of it, and visitors have said that they've seen apparitions, heard footsteps, and experienced unsettling encounters where an inmate once lived. Obviously, one of the most famous prisons out there is Alcatraz. And Alcatraz does not escape the haunted prisons realm. It is located in San Francisco, California, also known as The Rock. And it was known for where the country's worst offenders were dumped and incarcerated. It housed people like Al Capone, Dark Barker, and Machine Gun Kelly while it was open in operation, and it was supposedly thought to be unescapable. However, there's only been one successful escape attempt. However, it's unclear what actually happened to the inmates, whether they actually got out, whether they drowned, because no one ever actually found them or the boat that they escaped in.
Yeah.
Ironically, the prison closed 1 year after the escape, and it is now reported as one of America's most haunted locations, which include apparitions, voices, screams, footsteps, doors slamming on their own, and even eerie music being played.
Well, that would creep me out.
Well, the craziest part is, to segue to the next prison.
Are you seguing?
I'm going to segue to the next prison. And this is the one that I was most excited of, because I actually got to go last year. And it was so cool. Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia, PA. It was the first to be dubbed a penitentiary. Which the term actually derives from the word penitent, which is where the thought of rehabilitation came from. So Quakers who built it believed that it could be a place where inmates would be able to ponder and think about their crimes and essentially learn what they did wrong and make themselves a better person.
I just learned that like last week, and I thought to myself, how did you not figure that out on your own?
What, penitentiary?
Yeah, penitentiary. Like why didn't you think like penitent?
Well, it also comes from the idea that the Quakers who built it actually created windowless rooms, which is also crazy because these rooms, they're tiny, and then they have, like, some of them have tiny little, like, slivers in the wall, which I don't know. Obviously, they must have been added later, but the cells are so thick and so parted that they do allow for no human contact if you wanted it. Unfortunately, because of the solitary conditions that most of these inmates were put in, suicide became one of the more prevalent ways of death in Eastern State Penitentiary, including actual solitary confinement, which is crazy because we actually took a tour and you go down and you go into this what looks to be this tiny little stone walkway with these rooms inset. There's no light, no sound, no nothing. And if you were not to have, like, a flashlight or anything, it would be pitch black.
Wow.
So solitary confinement was actually ended in the 1870s, and then the prison closed in the 1970s. So Eastern State Penitentiary also housed Al Capone for a very brief stint, and actually they have his room completely done up to the way that he had it. In his room, he has a bookshelf, he has a record player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was basically, like, a tiny little, like, apartment, which is what he had.
He had a tiny house in the jail.
He did. And also, they, let me see if I can find it, because I guess I should have put this. I actually have the, because I couldn't go there and not buy something.
Well, I mean, yeah. My mom and dad went to Alcatraz and brought me back a part of the rock.
I do want to go to Alcatraz sometime. I've never actually gone there. I've gone to Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, which is also supposedly haunted, which I'll get to in a second. Eastern State Penitentiary actually housed a dog inmate.
Really?
His name was Pep, and he was the pet dog that the governor of Pennsylvania sentenced to Eastern State Penitentiary for life because the dog killed the governor's wife's cat.
Only in Pennsylvania. Like, what? Let's send a dog to jail because it killed our cat.
But I actually have the a magnet of Pep.
Aww.
From his little mugshot.
He even had a mugshot?
Oh, he had a mugshot. You can Google it. It's hilarious. Or maybe I'll post it with this.
Looking it up right now. Poor Pep. The cat was just a bastard and it kept, like, antagonizing him.
It's possible. So obviously people have seen, also tying back to solitary confinement, not only was it ended, but Eastern State Penitentiary was the first to implement solitary confinement.
My God, it says Eastern State Penitentiary Pep the cat murdering dog.
Yeah.
Poor thing.
So visitors claim to see apparitions wandering from corridors, hearing mischievous whispers in cell blocks, hearing footsteps and strange sounds, doors closing on their own.
There was another good piece of evidence from there that was actually on one of the first seasons of Ghost Hunters. They're up on one of the second levels, and you see, like, this thing in a, looks like it's in a cloak, covered in a cloak, head down, coming at you, coming at the camera, and then it runs away down the little walkway.
It's creepy. I took so many pictures. I made it take a tour. The only thing I'm upset about is if you go during October, they also do have a haunted event in the prison called Terror Behind the Walls, which I want to do. And then the other place that I've been to is, and it's not a prison, but I wanted to put it in here because it kind of ties into it, is the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in Weston, West Virginia. The asylum began construction in 1858 and finally opened to patients in 1864. It was obviously stopped during the Civil War, and it actually changed hands from the north to the south at one point. It was designed by architect Richard Andrews to maximize sunlight, the opposite of Eastern State Penitentiary, and fresh air, because they believed it would serve as a healing environment for the sick. However, the building that was designed for 250 people by the 50s housed 2,400.
Wow.
Which led it to crowded conditions and was housed with people who had almost no afflictions, to alcoholism to epilepsy. Patients were physically restrained and oftenly given inhumane treatments such as lobotomies and electroshock therapy and water therapy. Hundreds of patients are said to have died during the asylum's tenure. And the craziest part is that supposedly Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum is the largest hand-cut stone masonry building in North America.
That's crazy.
And is only second to the Kremlin in Moscow.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
So in 1994, the facility was forced to close due to reforms in mental health treatments, as well as the deterioration of the building. However, it is also another sought-out ghost hunter location because people claim to see shadowy figures roaming Trans-Allegheny's crumbled halls, which actually aren't crumbling anymore. They're actually just doing restoration on the building to kind of make it look the way that it was. However, they also do have a haunted attraction in the other building, which is only being like upkept, not restored. So even the people who work there say that they've seen shadows, they've heard voices, they felt taps on the back of their shoulders. There's also the story of a little girl who haunts there because not only were women put there, but children as well. And supposedly she likes to play with toys and you can interact with her in the children's wing.
Is that where you interacted with a child?
Yes. That's actually where I interacted with the girl. And I'm trying to remember her name right now.
While you're trying to remember.
Lily.
I can plug a previous episode, although you just said her name.
Sorry.
If you guys want to find out how you could have been sent to an asylum back in the 1800s, I believe it was during our episode called Welcome Home to the Asylum.
Yes.
Where Liz at the end gives us all the ways you could have been sent to an asylum, and some of them are pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, so the little girl's name is Lily, and people bring toys and things to her all the time. And the other really interesting thing that kind of ties back to one of the other prisons is this one actually shows how I found out a fire with a large group of people could actually be held well, because apparently a fire outbroke. And the way that the Kirkbride system is laid out is it looks like the kind of cut in the center.
Is that the bat wing?
Yes. And what ended up happening is instead of saying fire, and obviously this isn't a prison so people could kind of move freely, mm-hmm. but everyone out of their own room and stuff, obviously it was overcrowded. But instead of yelling fire, which would cause a panic, they actually rung the dinner bell.
Oh, okay.
So all of the patients calmly and collectively went into the kitchen, and because this fire ended up destroying a decent chunk of the asylum, no one died.
Wow.
Props to the person who thought that one out.
Yeah, really? That was a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. They're like, oh, everybody will come for food.
Quiet and calmly.
Let's go get some pudding. Let's go get some pudding.
Pudding! We'll get to that one later. Oh, that one is awesome. Love it. And because I haven't said it for either episode, I'm going to lump them all together. All of my sources include Britannica.com, CreepyLA, LACurbed.com, Shudder, LegendsOfAmerica.com, The Hollywood Reporter, as well as National Geographic and Corrections1.com.
Corrections1.com. Did you see me shudder when you said shudder?
Ooh. Mufasa.
Ooh.
Yeah. But that's all I got for you on haunted Hollywood and haunted jails.
Well, those are two of my favorite haunted things to talk about, so thank you for that.
I thought so. I was very excited when I was trying to think of things to do. I was like, what can I do with ghosts? And I was like, luckily they've given me locations.
Yes.
You go, Supernatural.
I love haunted jails and asylums and stuff like that. Haunted anything, really.
But that's all I got. So next episode, we are going to be talking about a single episode.
Just one.
We're going to be talking
slackers.
About episode 20, What Is and What Should Never Be. And that's where we're going to leave you, kids. So watch the episode. catch up to us. I don't know why I'm snaking. I'm just doing it.
So tired.
I'm going to go eat some pizza. I'm going to eat some pizza and fall asleep. My decaf tea did nothing. Rude.
Damn it. Okie dokie, people.
Well, thank you guys for listening to this episode. And as always, like us, share us.
Follow us.
All the fun stuff.
Whore us out to your friends.
Yeah, slide into our DMs. You guys got any ideas? Have something you want to tell us? Tweet at us. Follow us on Instagram. And check out our website.
Was that it?
I think that's it. All right, guys. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
You've been listening to Balls, a Supernatural podcast with Lizzie and Missy. If you want more, follow on Twitter and Instagram at SBN Balls Pod or email sbnballspod@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe and follow Balls on your favorite streaming service.